It's been said, what got you here won't get you there. And it's true. With the pace at which our world is changing, if you aren't adapting, tweaking, and modifying your leadership approach, you're likely getting left behind. Today, we're talking about leading with agility, how to correct quickly. Hey, welcome to another episode of the Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast. I am grateful beyond measure that you would give me a little bit of your valuable time each month, and I promise to work hard to bring content that will help you grow in your leadership. If this content is helpful to you, seriously, it would mean so much to me if you would take a moment to like it wherever you consume it, to write a review or to rate it. That helps give us more exposure. And then to share on social media. As always, if you share this, tag me and someone from our team might repost you. We want to do everything we can to impact more people to help leaders get better. Also, if you're new with us, we have a leader guide, and it is essential that you get your hands on the leader guide. Go to life.church/leadership podcast. Just let us know you want it. And with the release of each episode, we'll send the leader guide to you. It has tons of valuable information as well as discussion questions for your team. This is an essential part of you growing in your leadership. Now, let's dive into today. I'm going to give you a long introduction using an aviation example. Stick with me. We'll get to a payoff, I promise. A few years ago, I got my private pilot's license, and I learned that when you're a pilot, there is a joke, and the joke goes like this. How do you know if someone is a pilot? And the answer is, don't worry about it. They'll tell you. And it's very, very true. So if I haven't told you, I happen to be a pilot. And after I got my private pilot's license, I then went and studied for my instrument rating, which is probably more difficult than getting your pilot's license. And that gives you the ability to fly in what's called IMC, which stands for Instrument Meteorological Conditions. And that's when you fly solely based on reading the instruments instead of using external visual references. Now, with a little bit of research, I found that only about 50% of all the pilots actually get their instrument rating. And of those, about 15% are current, which means only about 7% or so of the private pilots can actually do what's called flying in the soup. What does that mean? That means that you can fly in the clouds without any external visual references. And believe it or not, flying in the soup or in the clouds can be very, very difficult. Pilots die in the soup. JFK Jr. is an example. When you're in the soup, when you're in the clouds, you're blind to the normal indicators. You can't see the horizon. You can't see the ground. So you don't actually know where you are, and your body starts to lie to you. And you might think that you're turning one way when you're not, think that you're descending when you're not. And your body has a way of lying very, very quickly when you can't see the normal indicators. What do we do in leadership? Today, I want to talk to you about learning to read and interpret and trust the instruments, just like you have to do when you're in the soup. No matter what you feel, no matter what your body tells you, no matter how afraid you are, you need to believe by faith that what you're reading on the instruments is trustworthy. And I'll tell you right now, whether you know it or not, you're flying in the soup. You're leading in the soup. You're leading in a different environment where it's so much more difficult to accurately gauge what's going on in the world today because there have been so many massive changes over the last few years. And you know it, you feel it. And that's why I want to tell you, if you aren't adapting, tweaking, and modifying your leadership approach, you're probably getting left behind. Let me give you a short list of a few of the changes in the world. This is not exhaustive, but it's a running start. What is different today than just a few years back? We've got globalization. The world is shrinking and moving faster. We've got technological innovation. We've got the rise of AI. Who knows where this is going? We've got the increasing distrust of leaders. People used to typically trust those in leadership. There is a tendency and a bias toward massive and quick distrust today. You've got the emergence of the cancel culture. You know that you could say one wrong thing, take one misstep, and you could get canceled today. You've got the deeply polarized opinions and values. And besides, if you notice, this is an election year. You've got remote work dynamics playing into account today, and that was different than in the past. You've got the important focus on diversity and inclusion. You've got the ongoing overload of information. You read and hear and see what feels like almost everything. Bad news, complicated news from all over the world. You've got the prevalence of mental health issues. When I started in leadership 30 years ago, that wasn't really even a phrase or a concern. Now it's everywhere. You've got the waning resilience of team members. It seems like people are falling apart faster and faster. And you've got the anti-work culture and quiet quitting. The world is very, very different. No wonder you might be tired. No wonder you might be a little bit discouraged. You're flying or you're leading in the soup. Hey, Craig here, and we know that the quality of your decisions will determine the quality of your life. The problem is a lot of us are not great decision makers. In episodes 145 and 147, we're learning the strategies for becoming strong, intentional decision makers. And we dig into delegating emotions, making mistakes, timing, and so much more. In fact, there's so much to learn about decision making that it doesn't fit into two episodes. To help you build a specific plan to grow in your decision making, I've created an extra exclusive teaching you can only get as a part of our leadership community. It's a bonus episode called Discover Your Decision Making Style, and it's only for those of you on our email list. Based on my research, there are five styles of decision making, and my goal is to help you identify your dominant style and build a game-changing plan for making great decisions. Get it free by going to life.church/decision style, life.church/decision style, and we'll help you get better at making decisions. Now, back to the episode. And I want to talk to you about a little bit of a different way to think. How do you fly in the soup, or how do you lead with agility and correct quickly? And this talk's going to be a little bit different. Normally, I'm going to be kind of really structured, but what I'm going to do is be a little more free-flowing and talk about what I'm seeing and what I'm sensing in my current place of leadership, and then you can kind of adapt and adopt it to where you are. Three big thoughts, and then we're going to look at six things that I'm addressing and you might be addressing as well. Three big thoughts. How do we lead with agility? Number one, you need to learn to read, interpret, and trust your instruments. Learn to read, interpret, and trust your instruments. Number two, you're going to need to make constant, nonstop, small corrections. And number three, I call it this, you need to learn to feel and flow in your leadership. Let's talk about them one by one, and then we're going to look at six big changes that I'm addressing. Number one, you want to learn to read, interpret, and trust your instruments. Now more than ever, you want to read everything about the culture in the world today. You want to know everything about the culture in your workplace. You want to be asking questions. You want to be studying the numbers. You want to be studying the data. You want to try to interpret exactly what you have in front of you. For example, I am a pastor of a church. And in our world, back in 2019, attendance was such and such. 2020, COVID hit, and our physical attendance of people worshiping in church buildings went way, way down. Now, here's what's crazy. Over the next few years, attendance was building back up. This will be the first year that our attendance will likely exceed where it was in 2019. Attendance was down, but what's crazy is our giving or our revenue was way, way up. This is bizarre. This is confusing. It's almost unsettling to me as a pastor because giving is generally a reflection of the number of people that you're reaching and the depth of the engagement or discipleship you have going on in their hearts. When you have more people coming and you've got great engagement, giving goes up. When you have fewer people coming or lesser engagement, giving goes down. Suddenly, we have fewer people coming and more giving coming in, and this is very disorienting. What do we have? And the answer is, I'm not quite sure. How do we interpret that? Maybe one thing is that the frequency at which people attend is way down. Maybe we're reaching way, way, way more people online. I don't know what it is, but what I have to do is study it, analyze it, interpret it, and try to understand it. What I know is it's very, very different than what we had 5 years before, massively different. And so I need to change how I think, how I act, and how I lead in this situation. I'm flying in the soup. Other examples is that at our church, teams and people seem to be working sometimes a little bit less, meaning we might have fewer services, but more people are struggling at times when I'm exhausted, burned out. The workday in many parts of the country where I live is shorter, meaning school starts a little bit later and ends a little bit earlier. So parents are having to come to work a little bit later, leave a little bit earlier. The workday is shorter, and yet people are dealing with mental health issues. Marriages are struggling. People are burned out. And so I want to try to understand, like, why? What's going on? What do I need to understand? How do we respond to help people succeed, both in their homes and in the workplace? I'm flying in the soup. I'm not sure what you need to study in your organization, but there is something. For you, it might be studying why something is working. If something's going great, you want to know why it's going great, because like my friend Andy Stanley says, one day if it doesn't grow great, if you don't know why it's working when it is, you won't know how to fix it when it's not. So you want to study, like, why is it going great? You might want to understand why your revenue is up or down. You might want to look very carefully at employee retention. Do you have an issue there? You might want to look at analytics or returned items if you're in retail or returning customers. Whatever it is, you want to learn, study, understand what's going on, and especially when it comes to the health of your team. As it goes with your team, so it goes with the organization. And I would suggest that you really genuinely care about your people, like deeply care about your people, and dive in full force to understand how are they actually doing. Because based on my observation and those I'm talking to, our employees today are likely struggling more than they were 5 years ago. So what do you want to do? You want to ask questions, and you want to listen. You want to be a student. We're not assuming we know because we don't really know because we're in the soup. I recommend different surveys. We use the Gallup Q12 Employee Engagement Survey. We'll link to that in the notes. We use the Emotional Intelligence Test. You want to use any kind of self-awareness test. You want to study or ask questions. You want to understand how are your team members actually doing, because it really, really matters because you care for them. So number one, you want to learn to read, interpret, and trust your instruments. Your feelings may tell you one thing. Your instincts may tell you something else. You want to read and understand, what are the numbers telling you? What are you hearing? You want to trust your instruments. You want to understand, interpret what is going on. Number two, you want to make constant, nonstop, small corrections. Why? If you're flying in the soup, remember, you can't see the ground and you can't see the horizon. You've got no reference. So to use an aviation example, when you're in the soup and, like, literally you can be in the clouds for 30 minutes, an hour, just flying at cruise altitude, and you can't see anything. And so you want to make sure wings are level at that point. And then there's three big things you want to manage, especially when you're coming in for a landing and you're in the soup. You want to manage your speed, your direction, and your altitude, your speed. You don't want to be going too fast because that could be bad for the wings. You don't want to be going too slow or you could stall. You want to be managing the direction. If you're coming in for the airport, you want to aim for the airport. If you're just a couple of ticks off, you're going to miss the airport. And then you want to manage your altitude. If you're too high, you're going to overpass the airport. If you're too low, you're going to crash into the ground or the tower or whatever. And so you're managing speed, direction, and altitude. The same is true in your leadership. You're managing the speed at which things get done. You're managing the direction at which your organization is going, and you want to be at the right altitude so you understand and can interpret what's going on to lead well. Now, when you're flying a plane, this sounds kind of crazy. People, it's counterintuitive. I had to learn this. You pitch for speed and you power for altitude. I would have thought before I was a pilot that if you want to go faster, you give more power. You actually don't do that. You pitch for speed. If you want to go faster, you go nose down and you pick up speed. If you want to go slower, you actually go nose up and that slows you down. Then you power for altitude. If you want to stay where you are, You leave the power. If you want to go higher, you add more power. If you want to go lower, you actually pull the power back and then you nose up to let it slow down and then you start to sink. You pitch for speed and you power for altitude. If you're on an inbound landing, you're actually following what's called an approach. And I don't want to nerd out, but there's an ILS, an RNAV, a VOR approach, all sorts of different approaches. And there are different systems of giving you kind of like an invisible track in the sky to follow all the way down to the runway. The beautiful thing about many planes today is you can actually program in an approach and you can put it on autopilot. And for the most part, the plane will follow the pathway all the way down. But to be a good pilot, we want to be able to fly it by hand. And so we train to do this. And when we do, it is impossible to describe to you how many small changes you're going to make on the way down. It's going to be dozens. It could be hundreds of very, very small, quick changes. What you're doing is you're going to nose up just a bit, nose down just a little bit. You're going to aileron right, aileron left. You can add a little power, pull a little back. Nonstop, you're tweaking because you don't want to be too high, too low. You don't want to be to the right. You want to be to the left. Back to your leadership. How does this apply? If you feel like you're making constant, nonstop, small corrections, you are very likely leading well. This is just based on my observation. If you are not making constant, nonstop, small corrections, then I'd say it this way, the plane's about to get away from you, or your leadership organization could be drifting faster away from you than you realize. What you want to do is you want to make constant, nonstop, small corrections, and we're going to talk about six areas to do that in. Number one, learn to read, interpret, and trust your instruments. Number two, make constant, nonstop, small corrections. Number three, learn to feel and flow. Learn to feel and flow. What you want to do is you want to obsess about what you see, but at the same time, you want to intuitively kind of feel what's going on. So we're reading the numbers and we're interpreting. And what you want to do is you want to see problems early and you want to solve them quickly. The moment you start to see a problem, you want to recognize, okay, this is an issue. I see it. I want to solve it quickly. Don't overreact when you see it. Don't overcorrect. What you want to do is you want to read it, you want to feel it, and you want to flow with it. When I'm hand flying down on an approach, I don't ever want to overcorrect. I don't want to wait too long. Immediately, when I see any indication being off, small correction, small move, a little bit more power, a little bit less power, a little nose down, a little nose up. We're feeling and we're flowing it. We're not jerking. We're not overreacting. We're not underreacting. We're catching it immediately. All that to point to this. What are some examples of how you're likely leading in the soup right now? I want to give you a few of them and show you six different things that I'm working on in leading with our team. And here's why this is a little bit different. I'm actually going to talk about both sides of a similar issue. If I'm descending on an approach, there are times when I have to go nose up to slow it down, and then I have to go nose down to speed it up. And I may do that 8 times on the way down because I'm adjusting on both sides. If I'm coming in a crosswind, I may have to aileron left or right. I have to turn the plane right or left over and over and over again because I'm correcting on both sides to stay on the pathway. Now more than ever, now more than in 3 decades of leadership, I find myself correcting on both sides of an issue. If you find yourself doing this, I think you're probably leading well. Let me give you the areas. First thing is this. When it comes to work ethic, work culture, I'm having to tell people 2 things on both sides of the same issue. I'm having to lead and tell people you need to work harder, and I'm having to tell people you need to rest better. Both sides of the issue. Some people need to work harder. A lot of people need to rest better. To be real honest with you, when we hired a bunch of kind of new staff members, we had to go over more than today than before what a baseline work week is. And not to sound demeaning in any way, but we had to say, hey, you know, a full-time job starts at 40 hours a week. And let's go through your week. If you're coming in at 9, you're leaving at 3, and you do that for 4 days of the day off, and kind of add how many hours does that come up to? And some people are like, 31. Okay, that's actually not a full-time job. And so we had to coach people that a full-time job starts at 40 hours. And in ministry, there are going to be times when we do more than that because of the unusual demands of caring for people at unusual hours. Then at the same time, we've got some people that you need to kind of raise the bar. You got other people that are like, they're going so hard, and they're exhausted. What's happening, they're going to come in and say, I'm tired all the time. I'm about to burn out. Some of them are, but a lot of them are misinterpreting where they are. And you need, as a leader, to read, interpret what's going on, and to help them to succeed. Some people are not tired. If they were tired, they could take a nap or take a vacation. Many people are not tired. They're depleted. And there's a difference. If you're tired, you could take a nap. If you're depleted, you need to refill. And so we need, as leaders, to help our team members learn how to refill. For many people, it's not that they don't have enough time off, but they're not using their time off to replenish their energy or their spiritual fire or their marriage or whatever it is, and they've got exterior problems outside of work that are contributing to marital problems, parenting issues, and professional issues. And now more than ever, we are holistically discipling or training people to be successful. So we're correcting on both sides of the issue. Some people need to work harder. Some people need to rest better. The second thing is this. I find that I'm doing this more and more, is that we have to communicate earlier and communicate longer. If we want to lead something to change, we need to say it earlier before we expect it to change, and we need to keep saying it longer in order to create change. In the old days, back when the world was a little bit less complicated, we used to just come into a staff meeting with our team and say, okay, here's what we're going to do, and everybody would kind of do it. Now what we're finding is if we do that one time, it doesn't tend to move the needle as much. So what we have to do is we have to start communicating earlier before we even go public and then communicate longer. What we're doing now on really big changes, part of it's because of the size. When you have more people, you have to work harder to change. But we start with our top leaders, and then we go to the next group of the leaders, and then we go to the whole staff, and then we repeat it. What happens is I'll start with our top four leaders and we'll say, here's where we're going to go. Then we meet with our top 20 leaders or so and say, here's where we're going to go. Then we have a meeting where we have 100 leaders that come in and we pitch it to them so they all understand we're all on the same page. Then we bring the whole staff together from all the different locations and we tell it to them. And then we repeat it for quite a long period of time. For about 18 months, we talked about three things in our organization. We talked about reaching people, creating margin, and simplifying processes. What are we going to do? If you ask anybody, anywhere on our team, what are we working on? They will all tell you, reach people, create margin, simplify processes. Reach people. I told you that attendance was down. Well, that's a big problem because we're a church and we exist to reach people. Jesus told us to go into all the world, preach the gospel. So if we're reaching fewer people, that's unacceptable. We want to reach people. That's number one for us. Two is create margin. What does that mean? In a for-profit business, you want to create profit. We're not a for-profit business. We create margin. And what we do is we use that to fund ministries. How do we start 3 new Life Church locations in a year and pay for it in cash. We create financial margin that we then put into new ministries in order to reach new people. It's a very important part of our spiritual strategy. Then we simplify processes. What we found is that we know growth creates complexity and complexity kills growth. And our team had grown to almost 1,000 employees and we were slower. So we determined we have to simplify processes. So for 18 months, at every meeting, reach people, create margin, simplify processes. That kind of long-term focus would have been unheard of 10 years ago. But what I've found is you have to communicate earlier and communicate longer. And over the past year, our numbers and spiritual impact reflected significantly that focus. Had we not worked for a long period of time, we wouldn't have seen the incredible results. I'm going to encourage you to communicate earlier and communicate longer. Number three, you're going to need to lead with faith-filled optimism and cautious pessimism. Faith-filled optimism and cautious pessimism. People need to know that things can get better and that we're going to make a difference. In my terms, I would say that God is working and God is moving. And at the same time, the world is complicated. And so we got to be very, very careful. It's an election year. The economy, it appears to be booming in some places, and yet there's a lot of indicators that are going like debt's out of control and interest is still high and it's an election year. To me, it feels a little bit unstable. So what we want to do is we want to lead with faith-filled optimism. And yet, wait a minute, we got to be really, really careful because things could change quickly. And so I'm leading on both sides of that issue. Power, pitch up, pitch down, power up, power down, leading on both sides of the same issue. Number four, especially in ministry worlds, and I'd say this for everybody, we're going to need to love and lead with greater clarity and deeper compassion. We're going to love and lead with greater clarity and deeper compassion because there are more complicated issues in our world today with gender questions, sexuality, mental health issues, marital breakdown, financial issues, integrity issues. And when it comes to your staff and team or the people that you pastor or whatever, is you want to correct firmly and pastor gently. We need to lead with greater clarity. Here's what we believe and here's what we expect. And yet deeper compassion, knowing that people are hurting and they need love. Two more. Number five is in our world, we're saying this. We're going to think bigger and we're going to focus on the one. We're going to think bigger and we're going to focus on the one. We're going to think bigger than ever. Bigger than ever. We have the ability now through the YouVersion Bible app, we will impact over 1 billion people. That's bigger than ever. And yet for us, we never, ever, ever want to be too big to forget about caring for the one. From my spiritual background, we read about Jesus who would leave 99 sheep to go after the one. So what we're saying over and over and over again here is that we're big enough to impact the world. We're small enough to care for the one. We're big enough to impact the world. We're small enough to care for the one. You might want to think bigger in your impact, but you also want to care for people. Number six, we want to steward wisely and we want to invest big. Steward wisely. I think in this culture today, more than ever, we got to pinch pennies and be wise about everything. But in order to have a big impact, sometimes you have to swing for the fence. And so right now I find myself, again, pitch up, pitch down, power up, power down. I find myself on both sides, like, don't spend that. And yes, let's go big. Hey, let's be really, really wise and really, really careful. And yes, we've got to put the pedal to the metal now and do something significant. And it feels almost schizophrenic, but it's not. In order to swing for the fence, you have to actually pinch pennies. It feels like in leadership today, more than ever before, that I'm making constant, nonstop, small corrections. And I would say most likely where you're leading, how you're leading, you need to do the same thing. Quick application, let's do some questions to help you get better. Number one, learn to read, interpret, and trust your instruments. Here's my question for you. What are the most important metrics and cultural indicators you need to read, interpret, and trust? You may get around your team, the people that you work with, or your key volunteers, and ask yourself, what are the most important metrics? What are the numbers you're studying? Cultural indicators that could be in your team's culture or in the culture at large that you need to read, interpret, and trust. Thought number two, we're going to make constant, nonstop, small corrections. You'll likely be leading on both sides of the same issue, maybe work ethics. For some people, you're saying giddy up. For others, you're saying slow down. When it comes to spending, hey, we need to be more conservative. Hey, we need to be more aggressive. Okay, here's your question. What are the primary issues that need constant attention or correction? If you can't name two or three right now, chances are you're probably missing something important. What are the primary issues in your organization for your missional success that need constant attention or correction? And then finally, number three is learn to feel and flow. And this is where we study the numbers, we look at it, and then we flow. We know what's going on, and then we trust our instincts to interpret and to flow with it. We're not overcorrecting. We're not jerking. We're not coming in, this is wrong. No, we're just correcting. Hey, now let's stop this. Hey, let's go this way. Hey, let's go this way. And the question would be this: what changes do you need to make to lead with a better flow? For me, sometimes I'll emotionally overreact and I'll come in too strong. What changes do you in your leadership need to make to lead with a better flow? We're not going to overcorrect. We're not going to undercorrect. We're going to see problems early and we're going to solve them quickly. All right. We covered a lot of ground. And what I want to do is make a promise to you. I'm going to work hard to bring valuable leadership content. I'm going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, to share this content. Invite others to be a part of the community. We're not monetizing this. There are no ads. This is just my best attempt to help you get better. Would you invite others to be a part of our leadership community? Be sure and get the leader guide, life.church/leadership podcast. When you post, tag us and we'll likely repost you to help others be a part of the leadership community. And I want to tell you that sincerely, I love you and care about you. I believe that you have more in you. And I'm praying that you would have the confidence to do everything that you're called to do to make a difference in this world. Your leadership matters more than you know. And guess what? You're getting better. That's really good news, because everyone wins when the leader gets better.